Well, welcome to iPharmRx, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iPharmRx, and today we're going to be revisiting the SPRINT study. As our listeners hopefully recall, SPRINT was a NIH-sponsored landmark clinical trial published back in late 2015 that compared intensive blood pressure control with a systolic blood pressure goal of less than 120 to a standard control, which at the time was a systolic blood pressure of less than 140. Now, the results of the SPRINT study significantly influenced our current guideline recommended goals of therapy. However, the results of SPRINT suggested that community-dwelling older adults benefited the most from a more aggressive approach to blood pressure lowering, a proposition that some have pushed back against due to concerns that older adults are at higher risk for adverse events. And it's for this reason that the SPRINT MIND study, published in February 2019 in the Journal of the American Medical Association, caught my eye. SPRINT MIND specifically examined cognitive decline and the development of dementia, an outcome that I think all older adults worry about. So joining me today to talk about the SPRINT MIND study are Michelle Bailly and Amy Robertson. Dr. Bailly is an ambulatory care specialist at the Veterans Health Care System of the Ozarks and on faculty with the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences College of Pharmacy. And Dr. Robertson is an ambulatory care pharmacist at Wesley Family Medicine Residency Clinic in Wichita, Kansas. Doctors Bailly and Robertson wrote a commentary for iPharmRx entitled "Keeping Intensive Blood Pressure Goals in Mind, Does It Impact Cognitive Decline?" Michelle, Amy, thank you so much for joining me today to discuss the SPRINT MIND study for the iPharmRx podcast.
Thank you, Stuart. We're looking forward to discussing this trial today.
Thank you. We're happy to be back on the podcast.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing LR, a 61-year-old African-American man, in the primary care clinic today for a routine blood pressure follow-up visit. The patient has a long-standing history of high blood pressure. LR also has a history of dyslipidemia and is overweight, but is otherwise healthy. He reports no personal history of cardiovascular disease. However, his mother died at age 63 of an ischemic stroke. His father is still alive. He's 84 years old, but has dementia of unclear etiology and currently resides in a skilled nursing facility. The patient currently takes lisinopril 20 and amlodipine 5 milligrams daily for blood pressure control and simvastatin 20 milligrams for dyslipidemia. He currently weighs 245 pounds, which is an increase of 9 pounds from a year ago, and his BMI is 34.2. His blood pressure today is 136 over 78, and he had a fasting Chem7 A1C and lipid panel drawn this morning. The results look pretty good. His electrolytes were all within normal limits. His estimated GFR was greater than 60 mils per minute, and his blood glucose was 104, A1C of 6.1, LDL of 76, HDL of 48, and triglycerides of 107. So before we talk about the SPRINT MIND study, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things going through your mind? What additional information might you want to collect and assess? And are there any additional treatment options you'd be considering at this point?
Sure. So some of the things we are thinking about with this case initially are his risk factors for cardiovascular disease and dementia. Let's start with his risk factors for cardiovascular disease first. We don't have all of the information we need to fully assess his risk, but if we assume he is a non-smoker and his total cholesterol is 145, then his calculated 10-year ASCVD risk is 14.3%, which places him in the intermediate risk classification according to the 2018 American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology blood cholesterol guidelines. This patient is a candidate for a statin for primary prevention efforts given his age, ASCVD risk, and current LDL. The presence of additional risk enhancers strengthens his case for a statin. We know he has a family history of premature ASCVD, which qualifies as a risk enhancer. Additional risk enhancers discussed in the guidelines include a high sensitivity C-reactive protein level and or a coronary artery calcium level. So a C-reactive protein value greater than or equal to 2 is considered a risk enhancer. We don't have that information for this patient. A coronary artery calcium value, or CAC value, may be obtained in statin-naive patients to further estimate CVD risk independent of any other ASCVD risk factors. If this number is above 1, this score strengthens the case for a statin in a patient. A CAC value of 0 normally does not support statin therapy or initiation, but even if present in this patient, he may still be a candidate for a statin given his family history of early ASCVD. However, of note, the 2018 blood cholesterol guidelines state that a CAC value is not useful or necessary to obtain in a patient already taking a statin, like LR, as statins actually increase the CAC score. So at this point, the patient is appropriately on a moderate intensity statin with simvastatin 20 milligrams daily. As for low-dose aspirin, recent evidence from the ARRIVE trial would deter us from recommending aspirin in this patient at intermediate ASCVD risk with no reduction in major cardiovascular events at the possible expense of a higher rate of GI bleeds in patients treated with aspirin.
When considering LR's risk factors for dementia, his current age and family history put him at an increased risk for developing dementia. Additional risk factors include his diagnosis of hypertension and dyslipidemia. It would be prudent to ensure that these disease states are optimally controlled. We do not have any indication at this point that the patient is experiencing cognitive impairment, but if present, mild cognitive impairment is a risk factor for developing dementia. It may be helpful to get a baseline cognitive assessment score using tools such as the Montreal Cognitive Assessment or the Mini Mental State Examination. As for hypertension, his clinic blood pressure today is not at goal with a value above 130 over 80. The patient is currently on two of our preferred initial drug classes for hypertension with amlodipine and lisinopril. These agents are not at maximum possible doses for blood pressure lowering. Before recommending a change to his antihypertensives, I would like to ensure that he is adherent to his current therapy and would recommend home blood pressure monitoring. Lifestyle changes for cardiovascular risk reduction are also important to recommend. The patient's fasting glucose, as well as his A1C, indicate that he has prediabetes. Encouraging regular physical activity and weight loss are important to prevent progression to diabetes. The patient's BMI and history of hypertension indicate he may be a candidate for a weight loss medication in conjunction with lifestyle changes.
So in the commentary you wrote for iFormerX, you briefly described the original SPRINT study and its findings. Can you give us a brief synopsis of the original study design and the results?
The SPRINT trial was a multi-center, randomized controlled trial designed to evaluate the effect of intensive blood pressure control on cardiovascular event rates and mortality. So eligible participants were at least 50 years of age who were also at increased risk for cardiovascular events. Those with a history of a stroke or diabetes were excluded from the trial. Participants were either assigned to the standard treatment group with a systolic blood pressure target of less than 140 or the intensive treatment group with a systolic target less than 120, and medications were titrated based on clinic blood pressure values. Intensive blood pressure lowering resulted in a statistically significant decrease in the primary outcome event rate, which included the first occurrence of MI, acute coronary syndrome, stroke, heart failure, or death from cardiovascular causes. Participants in the intensive treatment group also had lower rates of heart failure, death from cardiovascular causes, and death from any cause.
So Amy, let's talk about the results of the SPRINT MIND study now. So for those in our audience who haven't read that paper, can you give us a brief summary of this analysis and its major findings?
Sure. The SPRINT MIND study evaluated the effect of intensive blood pressure control on cognitive outcomes, specifically probable dementia and mild cognitive impairment, or MCI. Those with a diagnosis of dementia or those being treated with dementia medications were excluded from the study. The final analysis included over 4,000 patients in each group. Baseline characteristics were similar between the study groups, including the baseline cognitive assessment scores. The majority of participants were male, and the mean age was roughly 68 years in both groups, with more than 25% of study participants aged 75 years or older. The primary outcome revealed a non-significant difference in the occurrence of probable dementia between study groups. However, the investigators revealed a significantly lower incidence of MCI in the intensive treatment group, as well as a significantly lower incidence of the composite of MCI and probable dementia in the intensive group compared with standard treatment.
So, Amy, tell us a little bit about what you believe to be some of the key strengths and limitations of the SPRINT study and this sub-analysis, the SPRINT MIND study.
Yeah, so the trial had a strong study design, including a large sample size, multiple sites, and enrollment of patients with risk factors for dementia. The study also utilized tests assessing multiple cognitive domains to obtain a thorough assessment of cognitive function. Other strengths include the utilization of an expert adjudication panel and a standardized method for classifying participants with MCI or probable dementia. As for limitations, the SPRINT trial was stopped early due to the benefits of intensive blood pressure control on cardiovascular outcomes. This early termination likely impacted the study results and may have lessened the ability to detect an effect of intensive blood pressure control on the incidence of dementia. Patients with a history of diabetes, stroke, chronic kidney disease, and symptomatic heart failure were excluded, which limits our ability to apply the study results to these patient populations. In addition, the adjudication panel did not assess for MCI at the start of the study, so no conclusions can be made on the effect of the presence of MCI at baseline on the trial outcomes. Lastly, this study was not designed to test different antihypertensive medications, so this limits our ability to discern the effect of specific antihypertensives on the occurrence of MCI or dementia.
Michelle, the results of the SPRINT MIND study leave us at a bit of a quandary, I think. The study was terminated early due to the significant benefits of intensive blood pressure control on cardiovascular outcomes, but the results of this sub-analysis are probably best characterized as inconclusive. There's a hint that intensive blood pressure control might be helpful, but we can't say with certainty that it would prevent the development of dementia. Is there any other evidence to suggest that intensive blood pressure control can, in fact, decrease cognitive decline as we age?
So you're definitely right, Stuart. The results of this trial do leave us with several questions, especially because there's been both positive and negative evidence regarding the association of blood pressure lowering with the development of cognitive decline or dementia. So before I discuss intensive blood pressure control, I think it's important to review the results of two other large hypertension trials, the systolic hypertension in Europe trial and the hypertension in the very elderly trial, or HIVET. Both of these trials were designed to assess the effects of blood pressure lowering on cardiovascular outcomes, but here more specifically in the elderly population. The treatment group in each of these trials had a systolic blood pressure goal of less than 150. But both of these trials had an arm or secondary trial evaluating cognitive decline. Their results were not consistent. An arm off of the original systolic hypertension in Europe trial found a 50% risk reduction for the development of dementia with blood pressure lowering with a calcium channel blocker. Now, this study occurred over a 2-year period in a very small subset of patients over the age of 60. But remember here, the blood pressure goal was significantly higher at 150. On the contrary, in the other trial I mentioned, the HIVET trial, the investigators did not find a difference in cognitive outcomes between their active and placebo groups. Now, there was an arm of the original ACCORD trial that evaluated cognitive outcomes. So as a reminder here, the ACCORD trial had a very similar design to the SPRINT trial, with intensive blood pressure lowering to a goal less than 120 versus standard lowering to a goal less than 140. After a 40-month follow-up period in the ACCORD trial, there was no difference in cognitive outcomes between the intensive and the standard treatment groups. So I think it's very safe to say there is limited evidence evaluating the effects of intensive blood pressure control on cognitive decline.
So let's go back to LR. What would you do? Do you feel the Sprint Mind study provides sufficient evidence to claim that intensive blood pressure control probably reduces the risk of dementia? And would it really change your treatment goals?
So unfortunately, the results of Sprint Mind still leave us with a few questions in regards to the relationship between intensive blood pressure lowering and the risk of dementia. It is important to note with this trial, though, that no negative effects on cognition were found with more intense blood pressure lowering in the Sprint trial. So when determining a course of action for our patient, I think it's helpful to consider some additional evidence that has been reported behind specific antihypertensives and the risk of dementia. A 2015 meta-analysis identified calcium channel blockers and renin-angiotensin system blockers as specific medication classes that may be beneficial in preventing cognitive decline along with lowering blood pressure.
So thinking back to our patient, LR is already on both of these classes of medications with lisinopril and amlodipine. We've already discussed that he has risk factors for both cardiovascular disease and dementia, but we also need to consider his risk for adverse effects. With the information we have, it doesn't appear that LR is at an increased risk for hypotension or falls currently. So assuming that LR is adherent to his current regimen and his home blood pressure log reveals blood pressure readings consistently above 130 over 80, it would be reasonable to optimize his current blood pressure regimen by increasing the dose of either his ACE inhibitor or his calcium channel blocker to primarily decrease his risk of cardiovascular events, with the potential secondary benefit of reducing the risk of MCI. Overall, this study points to the possibility that intensive blood pressure control may reduce the risk of cognitive decline and may be a reason to advocate for more aggressive blood pressure management. However, we have to remember that management of hypertension continues to be patient-specific, and we must take into account multiple factors.
Well, Amy, Michelle, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the treatment of hypertension, the goals of therapy, and the potential development of dementia as we age. And I think it's clear from your comments that you feel like lowering blood pressure is safe to do in terms of its impact on cognition, but it may have some benefits, and we certainly shouldn't shy away from it when treating older adults because it has significant cardiovascular benefits. Well, tell us what you think. Only iFormerX members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormerX. It's free. Sign up today. And if you are a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacist and would like to earn recertification credit for this program through the American Pharmacists Association, click on the link posted below the commentary on our website. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, signing off.